Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Show. Hey folks, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host for today, Bruce Marable, CEO of the all-in-one HR analytics dashboard Employee Cycle. And today we have a really interesting topic. For those companies that are on the smaller end and you don't have an HR person, but the CEO really has to step up and make sure that the company is hiring, training, and retaining the best workforce possible. Yeah, we're going to talk about that. So today, our topic is when the CEO has to be HR. And in order to talk about this, please help me welcome our special guest, Natalie Nagel, co-founder and CEO at WildBit. Woo! Natalie!
Thanks, Bruce. Hi, everyone. Nice to be here.
So usually the question that I ask first is, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR? But since you're not in HR, we'll ask a different and interesting question. What is your view of HR as a CEO?
That's a great question. I look at HR from the perspective of, you know, on a small organization like ours, we're 30 people. I look at it as a collaboration of kind of multiple disciplines, I guess. For us, it's much more related to culture and creating an environment where people feel appreciated and cared for and create a safe space. And then since, you know, we don't hire very often, we get to exclude in the HR piece your more typical, you know, recruiting and onboarding, offboarding parts of HR as a discipline. So really, when I think of HR, I think of culture and employee satisfaction, although we don't call it that, but, you know, employee happiness. And the periodic operational pieces of, you know, employee benefits and things like that.
Nice. And as a CEO, when you're doing this type of culture, employee relations, benefits type work, do you feel like you are becoming an HR person and doing HR work? Or do you just see it as you being a CEO doing what great CEOs do?
Yeah, I don't consider myself an HR professional at all. And actually, we now have, for the last almost 2 years, we have somebody who's been kind of becoming more and more our people ops, kind of head of people ops. But I look at it as my role of bringing the best people into the room and making sure that they're as happy and productive as possible. That's my job, right? That's how we're going to be successful. So whatever that means, whether it's recruiting or just creating the best benefits, the best environment, that's my job as CEO, is to make sure that we have the best people possible.
Got it. So let's start from the top. And when we look at the life cycle of the employee, it all starts with the recruitment. So without you actually having a recruiter on staff, I'm assuming you don't have a recruiter, right?
We do not, no.
So what does recruitment look like? And I'm assuming you are the face of the company, so you're doing most of the recruiting. Correct me if I'm wrong. What does that look like from a CEO standpoint of a smaller company?
You know, that's changed a lot. So we're 18 years old, so that's shifted a lot over the years. I would say if we focus on the last maybe 2 years, we recruit by going, you know, by posting things and going out into our community. So we're a software company, and there's a lot of places where, you know, we share job opportunities, but we also have a pretty solid following. So when we post that we have opportunities available, people come to us. And actually, what's been the most effective to recruit really special folks is my job of being external and sharing our story and being out there and talking about WildBit and our culture and what we stand for has directly created an environment where people gravitate towards WildBit. So we definitely recruit a lot of great people who just come to us and say, you know, I saw Natalie speak at a conference, or I've seen Natalie write about this or talk about that on a podcast. And I really want to work in that environment. You know, I really want to be here. So I look at my job, my role as CEO, as the cheerleader, you know, the person who's screaming from the rooftops, come work for us, we're amazing. And so as long as I do that work, then hopefully a lot of that recruitment is inbound from people hearing about us and wanting to work and work together with us.
Nice. So after we go through recruiting, then let's talk about the onboarding process. Are you managing that once you actually have made the decision to hire this awesome candidate? Or are you large enough where you now have managers of different divisions and departments doing that? What does that look like?
It varies by role. We're still pretty flat, but I have two people in operations roles that work together with me. I manage the onboarding process. We're trying to move into a more organized and intentional onboarding process. And that's what we've been doing the last year. And I spearheaded that project, did a lot of research and created kind of the first iteration of that. And now I have folks, Julie on my team is going to run the next version of that, you know, the version two of that onboarding. But I usually try to create the standards and the direction for the company. But obviously, like when we hire engineers, I'm not going to be the one onboarding an engineering hire on their technical role or their specific environment. But I will create the schedule and bring people into the room and, you know, bring the cultural things and create that kind of, how do we want that to feel? I'm big on your first 2 weeks feeling empowered and connected and not sitting on your hands. So how do we create that environment? How do we schedule face-to-face time so that people don't feel uncomfortable asking a new colleague for their time? And, you know, how do we tell them, you know, creating mitigating that feeling when you come onto a new job and you're like, what do I do here? You know, I don't want to bother anybody. And, you know, you spend your first 2 weeks just trying to putz around, especially in a remote workforce where it's much harder. You don't get to just pop into somebody's office. I set those standards and say things like, I expect, you know, the first 2 weeks to be pretty scheduled and I want to make sure that we have these reading lists ready and, you know, all that stuff. And then I'll delegate it to either a lead or an engineer who's going to own that onboarding or, you know, whoever in their specific roles.
So we hired the person, we've onboarded them, and I guess this would have happened in tandem, but we'll just talk about payroll and compensation. Because you don't have an HR person who is pouring through PayScale data, Glassdoor data, some type of compensation data, whether it's free or not, to actually try to benchmark what are market rates, what are the trends in different areas, especially if you're hiring remotely, for people to go in and say, okay, well, in Nevada, this is what a developer is getting paid versus New York versus San Francisco. How do you handle that? And what does that look like in your process?
So now we do, right? So I would say like over the last 6 months, we've hired some people in operations that have started to comb through that data. Historically, I would spend time researching it, understanding, especially if it's a new role, and then finding averages and then going back to the budget and saying, what can we afford, you know, and what can we make sense? And what's everybody else that is in a similar role at the company now? What are they making? Are they happy? Do we feel like that's satisfactory? And then I'll have a discussion with a candidate, and usually it's something around, you know, I really want to give people what they are hoping to make, right? I really want to financially help families and folks really reach their goals. So we will have an interactive discussion around, what are you hoping to make in this career change? You know, what are the things that are important to you? And then I'll go back and either I'll match or exceed, or if I can't match, we'll try to figure something else out and, you know, try to look at total comp. And, you know, we have very, very generous benefits and a very flexible work environment. So, you know, there's a negotiation or conversation there. Today, we're trying to be a little bit more methodical, although I will say, you know, we're nowhere near the, you know, clearly defined salary brackets for multiple levels, you know, just because we're so flat still. I think maybe in a year or two, we'll be a little bit more methodical with, you know, this is what a senior engineer is like, and this is what cost of living looks like, and, you know, that kind of thing. But for now, we try to keep things pretty standard across the board. I'm a big believer that contribution matters, you know, so I don't know if I want to pay somebody in, you know, a more rural environment less than somebody living in a big city, though I understand their cost of living is different, but because we can employ remotely, it changes the dynamic a little bit. You know, there's choice involved. So I try to be as fair in our compensation across the board as possible.
Because you have a flat organization, how have you historically dealt with promotions?
We don't promote titles necessarily, but we retain employees. You know, we have folks who have been with us 14 years, 10 years, 8 years, 6 years, you know, so I consider that a pretty big success. What we do is financially reward, you know, raises, and we do profit sharing and things like that. But from a career development standpoint, because we're a suite of products and we have different opportunities, and because our products get more difficult, we're always actively looking to help people change roles within the organization. So at Wildbit, we have people who have worked on multiple products, on multiple different types of environments. And so it's almost like changing careers, but within, you know, your similar organization. So the people that we attract definitely are not, up until this point, have not been people who are actively seeking titles. They want work that's extremely fulfilling, to get compensated fairly for it, to have an environment that is really exciting to work in, to work on great products, but, you know, that creates that work-life balance. So, you know, you kind of attract those people because we are flat and, you know, they're not looking for necessarily a title.
So because you've had some pretty impressive retention rates, it seems like you must have been doing something pretty awesome around engagement. So what does that look like across your workforce?
Can you define engagement?
Yeah. So how do you go about making sure that all your employees in your team are engaged with the company, are engaged with their team, and potentially engaged outside of work, but through work? So for instance, there are certain companies that will do team block cleanups because you're engaged with the community, but then also engaged with your team, but all through work. So have there been specific things and events and experiences that you've done to keep employees engaged? Or is it more about just, not just, but really keeping them engaged with the work that they're doing?
There's a combination of both, I would say. I think over the years, especially, we're a very close group of individuals who, you know, the work brought us together, but the company keeps us together. And so from a cultural standpoint, you know, Wildbit stands for a lot of things, and a lot of things around peace in the workplace and focus work and things like that. And so when you share those same values, I think that brings people together. So even just little things like discussions around focus work and proper work environments, things like that, has always brought us together. From a really tactical standpoint, we do annual company retreats. So again, so we're 100% remote. Well, not 100% remote, sorry. We're remote first, but over 2/3 of our team is remote. And so we do annual retreats where we all get together and spend a week together, and we cook together and work together and strategize and hang out. So that's, you know, clearly very important. And we, over the years, people move around to different projects, so they become closer to different folks on the organization. And then in the last 2 years, we've added, you know, Julie has joined our team, and her title is Team Happiness. And her really, like, her focus is to look at the team and how we engage together, making sure that everybody feels good working in their own environments, feels good working collaboratively in work group environments, and has everything they need to feel safe and secure and confident in their work. So, you know, that's been a very important hire for us to have that focus and dedication towards the remote team, to make sure that we can continue to feel good, you know, feel engaged and feel connected to the work and to each other.
Nice. So as I was preparing for this podcast episode, I did some digging on YouTube, and I found that your company, I don't know if you won, but I know you definitely participated in an office design competition, and it was pretty cool. And one of the things that I think your co-founder said was that you found that an open office environment just didn't work for your team. And so you went back to putting everyone into their own separate office. Is that correct?
So we've never had Well, back up. So we've never believed that open office works. We're pretty committed to the research that's been around since, you know, goodness, the 70s probably, around the importance of distraction-free work environments. And remote really makes that possible, right? Because everybody works out of their homes and they have quiet and focused work. When we brought, when we created a Philadelphia-based office, so like a headquarters, we had this big space and we tried to figure out a way to create that closed office environment there. And we actually spent a ton of money on these crazy Herman Miller pods, things that are like cubicle on steroids, you know, just trying to remove distractions and do what we could with the space. And, you know, of course it failed because you just need a door. So yeah, I mean, we are extremely committed to focus work and an environment that enables you to do your work so that you can get your work done and then go home and enjoy your life instead of, you know, being distracted all day and needing to work 60, 80 hours because you're just not getting anything done because you're, you know, just the environment doesn't give you space to focus. And when we moved offices, we found a much more permanent space. We built it out so that every single person in the Philly office has a closed door office, you know, their own office, nobody else in it with a door so they can have quiet time and get their work done.
Wow. So that really brings me to culture. What has that specifically done for the culture? Has it provided this, we all work together, but interdependently type of culture and attitude? Or does it ever make it so that if the door is closed and someone ever feels a little awkward to go in there? What are some of the things that, good or bad, that's happened once you did that?
I guess a couple things. We, from a good standpoint, it fixed what was broken. So the people that work for a while bit very much value their craft, right? The things that they do, and not having an ability to do that is extremely frustrating. So, you know, they were unhappy in the open environment. So that definitely created a space, and they were kind of jealous of the remote team because they got to get all their work done because they could close the door and nobody was, you know, even just somebody just walking into the kitchen, they don't even have to talk to you, but that visual distraction, when you're a knowledge worker using your brain in deep, important work, that visual distraction pulls you out of the flow and that's it, right? And then you got to get back into it and, you know, all the science is there. I'm not making this up. But I think the benefit on top of that is that you can't just pop into somebody's office and distract them. It's like extremely disrespectful if somebody's writing something or deep in code or something like that and you're like, hey, I got a question. Well, it's like you just ruined hours for them. You know, like it's good. They're going to be distracted. They're going to have to switch focus. You're going to leave the office. They're going to have to sit there. All right, let me get back into my flow. Where was I? It takes 20, 30 minutes to get back into the flow. I mean, it's a huge waste. And then they might have a meeting, all this stuff. So we're very committed. Even in the remote space, you know, we use Slack and it's like Slack has to be off. You have to be focused. You have to be working so that you can get your work done so you feel accomplished. It's really important. So if anything, doors just solidified the overall wild bit culture of minimizing distractions, not bothering each other, you know, being very thoughtful around what your colleague is doing and where they are in their workday, and, you know, not hijacking that opportunity.
Interesting. So when it comes to the culture, how do you feel the culture was built? Was it you and your co-founder that set the culture in place and then you felt that everyone else absorbed that culture? Or do you feel it was a lot more you and your co-founder started the company, more and more people started to join the team, and then it became this melting pot of the culture that everyone wanted. And then even today, as you continue to bring on more people, the culture is always moving and evolving based off of what the makeup of the team is.
I think there's a difference between like culture and values. And I think culture can evolve for sure. Values, you know, they come from us and the team, but, you know, we put those values and standards in place. The culture is absolutely a melting pot. It's an evolution of time and people changing and people coming on and people growing up and Chris and I growing up and all these things. And it's a conscious conversation with your, you know, with your team and your colleagues to say, what are the things we care about right now? How are they changing? How are we as humans changing? You know, people have different experiences that they bring to the table, and we're always learning and trying to understand how those experiences impact our culture and how we want to change it. And we try to, you know, combine our culture with our values. So, you know, values change as well. They become more refined, more ingrained, right? And so we review our values every couple of years and make some tweaks or changes to them. And then the culture feeds off of those, I think, a little bit, but also gets a lot of energy from new people that come on board because they bring perspectives that we didn't have before. I think that's why diversity in thought is so critically important in an organization, not just for the work to get better, but also for us to just grow and learn as humans what things mean to people and how it impacts each other and how to evolve that, you know. And I think there's a beautiful thing that happens when a lot of different people who share similar things, right? Like an organization, a culture has some threads that even all of us with different experiences, different backgrounds still will have those shared values, right? So those threads run between all of us, but we color them in different ways. And I think that's a beautiful thing when it works well together, when you can see it in action, it's really special.
So in regards to some of the more manual processes around following applicants through the process or payroll, even at your small size, have you started to adopt certain platforms and HR tech systems to help you do that? And if so, which ones?
Yeah, so we use JustWorks, which is a PEO. They handle all of our benefits and payroll. I love them very much. And we have, you know, a software called Workable that we use for collecting resumes and sifting through and kind of commenting and working through. It's probably the two bigger ones that fill out our HR suite, so to speak, if you could call it that.
Got it. So as a percentage, how much of your time do you think you spend thinking about working on managing people versus doing, whether it's sales or marketing or handling clients? What does that breakdown for you look like?
I don't handle clients at all. I don't do any sales. My job is 50% external, at least the way I look at it, 50% external, which is telling our story, making sure, you know, I'm creating the environment that the team needs me to create, and then 50% of my team. So that to me is everything. So that's culture, making sure that the operationally we're functioning in a way that really works well, and you know, strategically that we're building the right environment for the team and the right businesses for the team so that the team is successful. So that's kind of my breakdown. I don't handle customers or sales or anything like that.
For CEOs who might be listening to this podcast, what would you tell them is the hardest part of your job, the 50% of managing the people?
Oh, goodness. I mean, people is everything, right? I have so many friends who are CEOs and who are either miles ahead of me or miles behind me, and it doesn't matter. But everybody, at the end of the day, our hardest job is people, because people are everything. And so finding the best people and doing it well is really a struggle. And especially, you know, I think that I have not found a strategy for hiring that has worked in every scenario. So being adaptable to the roles you're looking for and how your organization has changed, and every time you're going to make a mistake, you're going to learn something that broke in your process, and you have to adapt and be okay with that. That's been, for me, absolutely the biggest struggle. I think we're extremely good at creating a work environment that is safe and secure and solves all the emotional and, you know, obviously financial and all those needs of an employee once they get here. But finding the right people early and understanding that they're right, the people early on, and making those difficult decisions when they're not the right people early on is definitely my biggest challenge.
So if 50% of your time is spent on people management, what do you think that inflection point is? And it could be number of employees, it could be revenue, It could be number of projects. But for you and for others listening, what do you think that inflection point is of actually bringing in a full-time HR person to help you deal with the people in the workforce?
So when I say 50% people, I don't mean necessarily one-on-ones and you know, payroll and things like that. For me, 50% won't change in the near future, because even as we expand and have middle manager, you know, more leads and things like that, I'm still going to focus on making sure that I have the right people in place, right? So that's understanding what roles we need, recruiting for them, you know, somebody telling me like, we need this person, go talk to them, you know, whatever that is, right? So that's still, culture is very much people or the team. You know, we hit that inflection point of could no longer do the operational piece about a year ago, where I was like, I can't manage payroll and benefits, enrollment, all that stuff anymore. That just wasn't a good use of my time, and somebody is much better at it than I am. So we handled that. And then the HR piece, the recruiting, onboarding, the being extremely thoughtful around how we engage with our team and not forget, you know, at 30 people, I don't know what's going on in everybody's lives anymore. And that's really important to me. So that's where Julie came in and we spent some time with her. She got a certificate in HR and doing all these things to make sure that she can take on more of that and be my partner in that part of the job. And this way I can work directly with her on strategy and bigger picture. And then she can execute a lot of those things. So I think somewhere around 2025 is probably a good number. We're probably too late to this game. I have friends who say after 15, you're crazy if you don't have HR. For us, it became a difference, you know, because we're not a funded, fast growing organization. We're, we've been around 18 years. We are very much about methodical, profitable growth. So we don't have a hiring need for HR. And I think that rapid hiring is often the biggest driver of getting HR early, because you have to do all that recruiting, you have to do all the paperwork, all those things that are really complicated and annoying. When you hire as slowly as we do, it was never really that urgent of a thing. It became the more cultural piece of, you know, engaging and making sure the team is happy and making sure all those things are great. So we were able to push it back to closer to 30. I would say 20 to 25 is, in hindsight, I should have started thinking about it somewhere between 20 and 25.
And then last question for this section, for all the HR leaders out there listening, say if you were looking to hire an HR person to bring them in today, what should an HR person be thinking about when they're joining an organization around 30 or 40 people, or being the first HR person? What are your expectations for them, and how should they be thinking about joining an organization to make sure they're as valuable as possible?
For our organization, and because we are so committed to the team and the people, and this is probably different for others, but for our organization, I want somebody thinking about what can we do to make a more fulfilling life for our team. So what are those things? And I look at fulfillment as multifaceted. You know, there's obviously the we work to make money piece, right? That's important. And so are we doing everything we can to make sure that folks are financially secure and that they have everything they need and, you know, all that stuff. And they feel safe, right? Financially safe. But the second part of that is their fulfillment in their work. So what are we doing to find out, are people feeling stressed? Are they feeling overworked? Do they have what they physically need in their workspace? You know, all that kind of stuff. So for us, what Julie's working on is thinking about the team. And what can we do to make their lives better? And that's really critical. Because I look at it as, listen, my entire success is based on the success of the folks that work for me. And if I can make sure that they feel safe and secure in their lives, you know, work is such an important part of our lives, then they will be happier and they will, you know, treat our customers really well and, you know, treat each other really well. And really, to be honest, protect Chris and I, really, you know, they protect us as much as we protect them, because we have such a caring relationship. So for me, HR is all around. Once I don't have time for it, it's like somebody else has to be thinking about who's sick, who was in the hospital, who has a relative that needs help, who's, you know, donating time or money to an organization locally that they're really passionate about, and how can we help? You know, how can we create an environment where we're still really well connected and focused on the health and well-being of our team is critical in HR.
Nice. So now we're going to go to my favorite section of the podcast, which I like to call the real, the random, and ridiculous, where I ask you a real, random, and ridiculous question. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, real question. Do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
I make the most amazing bread pudding in the world.
Oh, we true story. Are friends. And because you're in Philly, I am now coming to your office next week to get bread
pudding. We make it once a year.
Oh my
and God. It is the best bread pudding that you will ever eat. And it is amazing.
Okay.
Brioche, dark chocolate, and pecan.
I am very much of a bread pudding connoisseur. So
we can battle.
Bar. Yeah. You have a high bar. So I can't wait. You say you make it once a year. When is that?
Thanksgiving. I make it and then everybody fights over it. So we have to make two big giant trays and we use, it's like 30 eggs, two quarts. I mean, it's like a huge two loaves of brioche, but it is spectacular.
Well, there has to be a piece saved with my name on it.
Deal.
All right. So, random question. Favorite podcast?
99% Invisible.
Ah, and why is that?
Roman Mars is just amazing. He's got an incredible voice. But the topics are just so good. And I love a good – learn something new from a creative design standpoint is always so exciting, and I just love it. And it's a perfect length. It's like about 30 minutes, which is perfect.
Nice. And then last question, the ridiculous one. Have you ever had or heard any other CEOs give ridiculous reasons as to why they wouldn't hire an HR person at a small size?
A ridiculous reason?
Yeah. Has any CEO said, I'm great at this, or I'm amazing at culture, I don't need an HR person, or it's and I'm asking because there are a lot of companies that get to 100, 200 employees with no HR person. So I'm curious, and I'm sure our audience is curious, what would be the mindset of a CEO not wanting to hire an HR person? So I was just curious if you ever heard.
I mean, we've all seen The Office, right? And everybody's scared to death of a Toby. So I think the scariest thing when you're a small CEO who loves their team and their culture to be like, oh my God, I'm going to hire this person and they're going to come in and they're going to blow shit up. We're not going to be able to make jokes anymore. We're not going to be nice. We're going to have processes. We're going to have to sign stuff. That's the scariest thing you can have when thinking about we're this small little team. I mean, there's something about HR that makes you feel big. I mean, I've seen it in software now, and I don't know if it probably extends past software. They don't even call it HR anymore. People ops. Because somehow one, we don't like to call our team human resources. Like, who calls their humans the resources? Jesus. People operations feels really good. And actually really, it resonates with me because it is, it's ops, right? It's like, they're on my ops team. Like, Julie and T is my director of finance and operations. Like, we look at the team, we're like, this is like an operation to make sure that everybody is feeling good, right? And so that's a mindset. But if you just, you're scared to death, you hire, they're going to tell you all these things that you can't do and every small little law and all this shit. And it's like scary for an entrepreneur who's like, I want to do it my way and I want to stay small. And, I don't want to have bureaucracy, and a lot of bureaucracy comes from HR, So I think there's that fear. There's like a legit fear of, HR screwing shit up, breaking it, and nobody wants that. So, and I don't think it's true, it's that fear is definitely there and real.
That was an awesome way to end the podcast. Natalie, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Woo! It's such a great time chatting with you. So where can people find you and WildBit online?
We are just wildbit.com. Pretty easy. And I'm Natalie Nagel on Twitter. DMs are open. Come find me. But I love to talk about people. So that's my superpower.
Nice. And we'll put all of this in the show notes. So whether you're a CEO, CFO, HR leader, or just someone interested in learning about people stuff, We really hope you liked the episode. If you did, please go to iTunes, take yourself there, and be kind and leave us a 5-star review. Also, if you aren't subscribed to the podcast already, you would be so awesome. We'd be so happy if you're to subscribe through your favorite podcast player, whether it's on your phone or through iTunes, whatever you're using, subscribe so that you make sure you don't ever miss an episode. And for all of you HR leaders out there, don't forget to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.